What do you call two guys that were there when this happened?
Back to return at Spurlock. Michael Spurlock at the 10. He's to the 20. He's to the 25. Spurlock 30 to the 40-yard line. We could see history. 50, 40 to the 30-yard line. Yeah. Run, Michael. Run, Michael. Run, Michael. Run. Touchdown, Tampa Bay. There you go.
And that.
Shotgun set. Three receivers left. Here's the snap, and the blitzer is picked up. Brady underneath. Caught ball, Evans. He has the record at the 11-yard line. Mike Evans becomes the first NFL player in league history to record 1,000 yards or more in his first seven seasons, and what a throw by Brady. Congratulations, Mike Evans.
Who can forget?
Gannon looking, Gannon throws up the middle. That's intercepted at the 30. Derrick Brooks, 30. Touchdown, Tampa Bay. Derrick Brooks, the most valuable player in the National Football League. There it is. The dagger's in. We're going to win the Super Bowl.
Here's the snap. Mahomes running to his right. Look out. He may run. Mahomes directly. Oh, toward the end down. Battle. Intercepted. Picked off at the end zone. Bucks are going to beat the Chiefs. We're the champions of the world, and we still have a minute 33 to go. Devin White. What a great second season. That's it for KC. Bucks are the Super Bowl champs. They can't stop the clock.
We call them the Salty Dogs.
Welcome, everybody, to the Salty Dogs podcast. I am Scott Smith.
And I am Jeff Ryan.
And we are the Salty Dogs.
We are, yes.
And we do a few things here. We mostly talk about the Bucks. We're going to answer your fan questions at the end, and I'm going to remember this time. We've been doing actually been getting a good number of questions.
Yeah.
But I always forget to give them the address.
Look at you starting right away.
This is my best performance ever.
It's week one, and you're on your game.
Right. Well, you know, the first drive, it's scripted. It often goes well, so we'll see how the
first 15 weeks are be scripted. Go ahead.
So, if you want to send us questions about anything, you know, it's usually about the Bucks, but we like funny emails and stuff. So,
sure. Comments.
Comments. They could just be comments. Send it to saltydogs at Buccaneers, buccaneers.nfl.com.
And also, if you don't agree with anything we say, you can tell us that, too.
That's fine.
That's fine.
It gets debate going.
Yes.
Like Jeff and I currently disagree. I think it's really hot in this room that we're
in. And I don't think it is at all.
Yeah, you're even wearing a long sleeve
shirt. I know. Yeah, I know.
I guess I just run hot.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about the Bucks. Oh, the other thing we do is most times is we have a guest. And this week our guest is going to be one of the breakout players of training camp.
Yeah.
Rookie outside linebacker Marquise Watts.
Yes.
Really looking forward to that.
I am.
Find out a little bit more about him.
Fascinating story, really.
Undrafted rookie.
Crazy.
Who actually wasn't even one of the first undrafted rookies we signed in the first round. He didn't get signed by anybody and came here on a tryout contract.
Yeah.
And
very minimal tryout contract.
I'm going to ask him about it, but I really liked what he said in the locker room the other day after he'd made the team.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, remember, I was a tryout player. I had one shot to get this right.
Wow.
So, you know, if you're an undrafted rookie, you get signed as an undrafted player and your first few days of practice don't go well, unless you get cut right away, you still got OTAs and mini camp and training camp. He had to prove in one weekend
that he's the real deal.
That he was worth a roster spot.
I'm curious to ask him about how his experience with the Jets were, because they had him and then they let him go.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so he did get picked up.
I believe
right after
so, yeah.
Or maybe sometimes if these guys don't get signed right away, they go to a couple rookie camps.
I think that's what they did.
Well, he'll clarify for
us. I think that's what it was. He went to
their loss.
Yeah, I'll say.
We didn't just go up there and steal them from them when we were doing joint practices, did we?
No.
All right.
No, he was with us.
All right. We'll talk more about him when we talk to him.
Sure.
I guess one thing that we probably have to touch on right off the top is the Mike Evans situation.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to really dive too deep into that because, you know, team and him, they're negotiating, and we're not speaking for the team or for him.
But here's the thing, and the other reason why we're not going to dive deep into this is nobody really knows except the two parties.
Right.
And, you know, there's their story, there's our story. I will say ours, a Buccaneer story. And then somewhere in the middle, there's the other story. So
I don't know if there's stories. It's negotiations,
yeah,
right?
You know.
So Mike Evans' agent, and we've known, of course, that Mike was trying to get a new contract done and has stated he would like to be a Buccaneer for life, which is what we
which
want.
Which we want,
as well.
Yes, no question. No bias
since
on that
he's,
at all.
He is, without question, the greatest offensive player in franchise history.
I agree.
There's not even a debate.
Mm-mm.
He
look at all the quarterbacks he has been thrown.
He wanted to get a contract done. It's not done as of now. This is his last season on his current contract. And so the agent basically said, if we don't get something done by the 9th, which is the Saturday before the game, then we're going to table that discussion.
Right.
And there was obviously, within that statement, some expressions of frustration that nothing had gotten
done. I'm sure.
And accurate portrayals of Mike as a guy who's always been a team player.
Very much
and
so.
And has done all the right things. Nobody disagrees with any of that whatsoever. And hopefully it all gets done and everybody will come out with the usual line of, hey, it's business.
Having
it's
negotiated business contracts, not player contracts, but business contracts, it's the nature of the beast. It's back and forth. Sometimes it stalls. Sometimes you have to rethink.
Lots of times the deadline helps.
Sometimes it does. Sometimes it doesn't. So you don't. Because if there's a deadline, I think the big question is, okay, you have until Saturday. That's it. So speculation is, what does that actually mean? Does that mean we're just not going to talk about it for the rest
of
the year?
I think that's what they said.
Yeah, but there's been speculation out there. What's Mike going to do? So,
right. Well, he's going to play. Okay, so there's different. So.
Yes.
No, I mean, I think it says in the statement that he would focus on football after, if the deal was after the 9th.
Correct. But there have been underlying currents of people saying, well, is this going to be a holdout? Is this that?
I don't
see it
that
way.
Contrary to the statement itself, when he said if it wasn't done by the start of the season, then he would focus on football.
I think it wasn't so much the
So you're just talking about people outside speculating.
No. Not the, yeah, they're speculating on what Mike said afterwards. Because he just kind of like, I want to play. I'd have to look it up. I'll have to look it up.
Well, in any case, there are different kinds of
yes
holdouts, quote unquote. There's like what Chris Jones is doing with Kansas City. That's a holdout, and he's under contract, and he's losing. Yeah, he's losing lots of money during his holdout.
Yeah, which is crazy, right?
There are just simply not signing a franchise tag, which is not a holdout because until you sign it, you're not under contract, so you're not losing any money in fines or anything. You're just not getting any money from a contract. There's the hold in, which is kind of like what I guess Brian Burns in Carolina is doing, where you do report to the team and you don't get fined, but you have some reason that keeps you off the field until you're satisfied with your contract.
Right.
And then there's this kind of thing that's a deadline, which is, hey, we don't want to talk about this during the season and we really want to get the deal done. But if it's not done by this day, then I'm not going to continue to
talk about it
during the season. Players have done that many, many times in the past.
And that's actually pretty smart because then you just don't want to be bogged down in a bunch of stuff.
Then if you're a Bucks fan, you're glad that Mike is playing because he makes our team much better.
Mm-hmm.
But you're also worried that once the season is over, then there'll be a ticking clock and you'll have about 2 months to see if you can get him under contract. And,
right.
And will he be as motivated to do so then?
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, that's enough on that, right?
Well, yeah. Well, the other side of the coin is he still is under contract. It's not like he's not under contract. It's his last year of his contract. So.
Right, but we want him to be here longer than just
correct.
This year. That's what I want. I guess I can't necessarily know that I'm speaking for everybody in the organization, but I would surely guess, right?
You're really going on a limb on that one, aren't you?
All right. Well, the season is starting.
Yeah.
The one interesting note on the depth chart that the Bucks put out, the first regular season depth chart they put out, is that Sean Tucker, another undrafted rookie, has been moved up to second in running backs behind Rashad White. So it goes White, Sean Tucker, Chase Edmonds, and Keyshawn Vaughn. So the reports and the things that we were seeing in training camp and in the games was not misleading. He really was impressive. And Coach Canales said when he was talking on Monday that after Rashad White, the backup is a committee, right?
Yep.
So
and a pretty good one.
So this just because he's listed second and Edmonds 3 and Keyshawn 4 doesn't necessarily mean he'll be the first guy in when White comes off, or he'll play on third downs, or Keyshawn will or won't play. We're going to see how it's going to – I know what you're doing over there, aren't you?
I am.
Are you reading
– I'm just double-checking.
Mike Evans'
statement? Yeah, and Mike is – yes. Mike is like, I want to be here. Yes, all those things you said.
I know, because you're barely paying any attention to me.
I'm paying total attention to you because our running back situation, I think, is in really good shape, and I'm excited about it.
You know what I like about our depth chart?
What?
When you look at it and you start going down it player by player,
you feel good, don't you?
Well, that's what I was going to say, but I don't have internet. Well, I was going to call up our depth chart.
Well, that's easy to do.
Why am I in airplane mode?
I don't know.
This is good podcasting right here, man.
Well, that's because you're not ready.
What is
they
it?
Just
is
released...
it Bucks AV? Is it HQ? Is it HTC Guest?
Yes.
Right?
You can do. Yeah, that's one you can use. It's easy.
the depth chart, if you go down it, it is a lot of homegrown players.
Yeah.
That's what I like about it. So we are moving into the post Tom Brady era, right? The mm-hmm. post go all in with every contract. We have to kind of, you know, to utilize that, make the most of that window. And now, as Jason Light has put it, you're kind of having to pay the bills when it comes to the cap. But you're still trying to build a good team. And this team has been built almost completely, especially the starting lineup, out of homegrown players.
Are we talking offense or defense?
Both.
Okay.
So here's the offense. These are Evans, Godwin, Tristan Wirfs, Robert Hainsey, Cody Mock, Luke Goedeke, Cade Otton, Coe Kieft, Rashad White. Mm-hmm. That is 9 of the 11.
Correct. And you're talking about Baker Mayfield.
And Matt Filer, the new left guard.
Correct.
And then on the starting 11 on defense, it's Kalijah Kancey, Vita Vea, Logan Hall, Joe Tryon-Shoyinka, Devin White, Levante David, Jamel Dean, Carlton Davis, and Antoine Winfield. Again, 9 of the 11, the exceptions being Shaq Barrett and Ryan Neal.
And yes. Which is...
And a lot of these second row or second column of guys are also homegrown. So if this works, if the Buccaneers are good this year, or if they take a little bit on the chin this year and are good in 2024 and beyond, this has gone really well.
Well, they've gone from an older team to a...
You got a lot younger.
A lot younger very quickly. Now, and I kind
of
like...
Cheaper at a lot of spots.
Yeah, and you had to. Mm-hmm. But I also like what Todd said, is just because you don't know the player's name doesn't mean he's not a good player.
Yeah. Now, to play devil's advocate, this includes 13 rookies, including 6 of whom are undrafted.
Which 13 is a lucky number.
We like these guys, obviously. Yeah. But it's not really reasonable for us to assume they're all going to be great players or core players until they've provided some evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Jason Light was saying the other day, now, you know, he was saying how much they like this rookie class, even the undrafted guys. He said, now, we don't know at this moment if all of them will make it through the end of the season or not. But I feel like he's pretty optimistic that a good number of them will.
Mm-hmm. I'm kind of excited about it because it, you know, just all these young guys coming in, everybody's having an opportunity to play.
Yeah.
It's gonna be a lot of fun. I don't know if I'm going to feel this way in 6 weeks from now, but right now I'm pretty excited about what's going on.
Does that mean you're also excited about Baker Mayfield?
I am very excited about Baker Mayfield. Good. I really am.
The
national media, they're down on him. They're
definitely just not on us or him.
You know, he hasn't. I think he's like 8-20 in the last whatever 30 games or 28 games. I've seen all of that, but I will say he didn't just become a bad player. He's healthy right now, and I think in the NFL, this is the best offense he's been on.
You mean talent-wise, like Mike and Chris Godwin?
Correct.
Some of that...
The weapons he has.
Some of that will prove true or not, depending on how well this revamped offensive line works.
True.
But I think that they signed Baker believing he... his skill set was a good fit for this particular offense that Dave Canales is installing, and which worked really well in resurrecting the career of Geno Smith last year.
Well, and I think that's part of it too. I mean, if you go back to last year at this time, you know, of the Buccaneers, people were saying we're going to make another run for a Super Bowl again. I mean, there were high expectations last year, and it didn't work out. So I kind of like being. Just like no one's expecting much out of this team other than
the
people, except the people in this building.
I liked Dave Canales. Again, I think we're going to end up talking a lot about Dave Canales' press conferences because they're very entertaining and he gives long, fleshed out answers.
Mm-hmm. So, I've never been around someone as upbeat as he is.
He is unflinchingly positive.
That's a good thing.
So he was talking about Baker and basically the question was there like an aha moment where you realize, okay, this is our starter,
and we're
excited about this.
Right.
And I feel like those questions don't usually work very well. I think the coach usually says, well, not really, it was just the whole body work. But he really did kind of come up with a moment.
He did.
And it was an indoor practice. It was the week after he started the first preseason game and did well. And the week prior to that, he'd had some shaky days, and apparently, according to Dave, Kyle Trask had had good days on those same days, mm-hmm. so the disparity between them was kind of jarring on those days.
Yeah. The competition was closer than everyone.
It was for a while there, yeah. So then afterwards, they're in an indoor practice, and he tells the story about how Baker launched like a 65-yard mm-hmm. post route that just settled nicely into Mike Evans's hands. And he said it was funny because he's like, I got goosebumps. It was like a goosebump moment. And he said from that moment on, Baker's just got it. And what he's trying to sell Baker on is, and he held his fingers about an inch apart, he says, we need this many special plays. This is not much. I'm holding my mm-hmm. fingers about an inch or two apart. Mm-hmm. So we don't need home run ball. We don't need hero ball on every play. Mm-hmm. When he saw that he had Mike and he took the shot.
Correct.
And then
he read it and took it.
And then he started, went right back to after that, taking the short and intermediate stuff that the offense was generating that where they wanted him to throw the ball on those plays. He says, you do that. And then when their gloves drop, then you get the knockout blow. Mm-hmm. So you, as long as he recognizes the correct moments and doesn't try to force too many of those big moments, Dave thinks he's going to work in his offense.
And I agree because I think with Baker before, like when he was with Oklahoma, he was a gunslinger and kind of the guy carried the team. And, yeah. And then in Cleveland, it was all on him. It was here. That's not going to be his case. He just needs to manage it, needs to play to his strengths.
Dave Canales calls it a quarterback friendly offense mm-hmm. because you don't have to be the hero on every play.
Right.
But
you will become the hero if you follow the plan.
And there are moments, though, where you will go for the big play. Mm-hmm. So I just liked all that. I thought that was pretty
sure.
Cool.
Well, it's interesting that, we went up so high when Tom Brady came here up to charts of national. Everybody wanted to talk about the Buccaneers. And when Tom left, it's kind of like everyone thinks that's it. It's over. It was totally done. And so I'm looking forward to seeing how guys, guys have been here. There's some quality guys on this football team, period.
Oh, sure.
Period.
Even the detractors in the national media always admit, now they still have a lot of talent on
there. Yeah, but, it's a quarterback situation. Yeah. And, yes, you do need a quarterback to win, but is this a situation, and we talked about it last, Salty Dogs, with Seattle. No one gave them a chance. Now, you got to prove it. You can talk about it. You can throw stats all you want, but that's all history.
I would argue, too, that Geno Smith never had a single season in his career that was as promising as Baker Mayfield's 2020 season.
That's
interesting. He was really good in 2020, and so were the Browns.
Yeah.
And so my point being is I know that the deeper numbers, the win-loss record from last year and mm-hmm. some of the deeper statistical analytical numbers from last year do not treat Baker very kindly for his performance last year. But I get that. But haven't we also seen him do very well?
Yeah, and I think also they have a tendency to forget that how many offensive coordinators he's had, which is always something that everybody goes by the wayside. I think he had a new one every single year that he was in Cleveland. So, and then, of course, last year you go to the Carolina Panthers, and we're not even going to talk about that disaster. And he did halfway decent with the Rams, but they weren't a very good team at that time. They didn't have anybody left. They were a hurting team. So
he had one really impressive game when he first got there.
Yeah, was that not crazy? Like 4 days after he gets there?
I feel like we tend to do this same storyline every week, and I don't want us to sound like we are apologists. Like,
no.
Oh, there's no reason. Like, he was hurt or he had different coordinators every year, and that's why it hasn't gone well. I'm sure that Baker himself would take some responsibility.
Absolutely.
Or maybe all of it. I don't know.
Sure.
But I just think we are too easily forgetting that we have seen actual evidence of him being good.
Yes. And
so now we see early on here, it's just preseason, mm-hmm. it's just practice, but we start to see things that we like, right?
Well, yeah.
Why don't we, until it goes bad,
right?
Let's stay optimistic about it, well, until and unless it goes bad.
Yeah. Well, also, too, is that, on the Salty Dogs, if it's not going well, we'll bring it up. I mean,
we might be a bit salty.
Yeah, about it. And either you're right or you're wrong, but you don't know until it plays out. And it's a perfect example of when everybody talks about, oh, the NFC South, it's just going to be a horrible division and da-da-da-da. Well, you don't know that. Now, you're looking at history and thinking maybe it won't be. But still, I think it's the only division that had all teams with at least 7 wins.
Yes, that's probably true.
So?
And no teams with more than eight.
Yes, I mean, but.
Jeff, my point.
But what my point is this. Is
you're
that,
trying too hard and it's not going to sound. It's going to make you sound like you've got rose-colored glasses.
I do.
Okay, well, that's not great analysis.
What I'm basically, no, what I'm saying is that the division isn't really that great, but then again.
It wasn't last year.
It wasn't last year.
That's a fact.
But you can't.
All four teams were under 500.
But you can't necessarily say it's going to be a fact this year.
Yeah, you, if you're trying to predict what's going to happen, which millions of people are trying to do in Vegas and all that, then I can understand. You look at it, you go,
sure.
This is what the team was. This is what they've done since then. Okay, I don't see them being any better. But in reality, that's usually not how it works. There's usually a lot of up and down movement. There's usually, the league sent out its kickoff report, and they always emphasize how often teams.
Last place team goes to the first place.
Just, I think it's an average of usually like six teams, mm-hmm. six new teams in the playoffs every year. I mean, there's the NFL never goes as neatly as we all look at it and think it's going
well,
to.
Well, and that's like drafting. You know, you hit and you miss. That's the way it is. But I think that with wins and losses and stuff, like, I mean, you got to stay healthy. I mean, there's just so many different variables to how this is going to play out. But I have been making notations on.
You've been keeping receipts?
Yes, I'm keeping receipts. So wow, very good.
If I would take the typical national media member mm-hmm. analysis of the Bucks, which I've seen over and over again leading up to this season, and we've already said it, they still have a lot of talent on defense.
Mm-hmm.
They still have talented pass catchers and offensive skill
correct.
Position. But we don't think they're going to win because we don't like their quarterback.
Correct.
So let me just say, hypothetically, Baker Mayfield does play well. Doesn't mm-hmm. even have to be great, just well.
Right.
So if I told you that happened, told you the analyst who just gave me that report, mm-hmm. and the only reason you were saying the Bucks were going to stink this year is because you think their quarterback's going to stink, and I'm telling you the quarterback's not going to stink, don't you now think the Bucks have a good shot to win 9, 10, 11 games? Because you like the rest of the team. So now that person would respond, yeah, okay, fine, but that's not going to happen. But all I'm saying is the avenue to you all being wrong about the Bucks as a team is only one thing, and that's the quarterback being better than you expect.
And you haven't been around watching the quarterback.
Yeah, but, okay, it's about 15 throws in the preseason.
Yes.
And
but I'm just, practice. Yeah. Yeah, fair enough.
I love what we've seen, too.
Small body of work.
We don't sound very realistic if we just keep acting like we know everything's hunky-dory.
No, it's not. It's going to be a lot of ups and downs. But I just think it's just going to be better than most people think.
I guess
And you know what? At end of the year, either we're right or we're wrong.
So now we're in the first week of the season. It's the Vikings.
Which is a good team.
Who were 13-4.
Yeah.
But also historically good. I think they went 9-0 in one score games, mm-hmm. and that's the most one score wins in a season without a loss.
Yeah.
They actually had a negative point differential.
Mm-hmm.
That's because they absolutely got hammered in a couple games.
Yeah.
And then they would win another game by 2 points, and then they'd get hammered by 40 by the Cowboys. So there was a lot of skepticism about them, but your record is your record. They were 13-4.
You are what your record says you are.
So, and then they bowed out pretty quickly in the playoffs to the Giants, who were another kind of a surprise team last year.
Well,
so,
see, last year there's a perfect example of a team no one gave any hope for and turned it around with a new head coach.
Yeah, that seemed to be the classic situation where it was such an upgrade at one important spot, in this case, coach,
mm-hmm.
that
What Jacksonville is the same was the same way.
Exactly.
2 years ago,
from Urban Meyer to Doug Peterson was such a huge upgrade that it made the difference.
Yeah. So. And people were.
So the Vikings have a new coach, by the way, not a new head coach.
No. OC.
No,
or
DC. They replaced Ed Donatell, who was pretty well known for being kind of a passive play caller.
Yeah.
Kind of that sit back, too high safety, bend but don't break kind of thing. Brian Flores has always been well known for being extremely aggressive,
mm-hmm.
blitzing a ton, and exotic blitzes. And I think that we were talking to somebody who knows not too long ago, mm-hmm. and we were asking about Brian Flores, and I was talking about his tendencies, and he says, yes, but you got to have certain players to make that kind of approach work.
Which made me think of the Tampa 2.
Yeah, exactly. Which has actually kind of come back in style a little bit as teams try to limit these big play quarterbacks from, you know, like Patrick Mahomes, they kind of adjusted. Joe Burrow, they adjusted because teams started playing him so much too high, which is Tampa 2, right? Two safeties, your middle linebacker has to cover down the middle of the field. There's a lot of zone.
Right, but the problem is you got to have the right players to be able to do it, because
that's why it became the theory so famous here.
Yes, the theory works, but you got to have the players.
Not everybody has Rondé Barber, John Lynch, Warren Sapp, Derek Brooks, Brian Kelly, Simeon Rice, Shelton Quarles, and all those guys at the same time.
Correct. There was a reason why it worked. Yes.
So can Brian Flores make his style of defense work with their personnel? They had a pretty bad secondary last year. Mm-hmm. They were 31st in the league in pass defense. They have changed a lot of that. They signed Byron Murphy from the Cardinals. They drafted Mekhi Blackman in the third round. He's a corner. He'll probably start. And they drafted another corner or safety, defensive back in Jay Ward in the fourth round. They loaded up a little bit on the front line with Marcus Davenport as an outside linebacker and Dean Lowry from the Packers. Marcus Davenport, of course, was from the Saints. Mm-hmm. And so they're hoping to get more pressure up front, and they're hoping that their secondary is improved. But just like I've been saying about some of the things we've changed, it's a fine plan and all, but let's see if it works.
Yeah. Well,
you know, I don't, the Byron Murphy signing doesn't knock me off the boat into the water.
But they have to be feeling pretty good about themselves.
I think Brian Flores is a smart coach. Mm-hmm. So therefore, if he finds he doesn't have the personnel to be he'll as aggressive adjust. As he wants to be, he'll adjust. But I think most Vikings fans are pleased about the change from what I've read and are looking forward to somebody who's more aggressive than Ed Donatell was. Mm-hmm. So,
you know what I'm not looking forward to?
No.
The horn.
Oh, God. I hate the horn.
I can take the drum, but I can't take the horn.
The horn is lame.
Yeah.
Do they still have the guy riding around on a motorcycle?
I don't know if he's still there anymore.
I will say the annoyance factor of their new stadium is a lot lower than the previous one.
Yeah, that's a beautiful stadium.
It is a beautiful stadium. Hmm. I wonder if they fixed the glass because, you know.
No.
No. Birds were dying in the hundreds because their glass either was reflective or wasn't reflective. It needed to be one or the other. There's a lot of glass on that stadium.
Yeah.
So birds were flying headlong into it, breaking their necks and dying.
Wow.
That's kind of a big story around that stadium in the early going. I don't know if they fixed it by putting a treatment on the glass or not.
Yeah. I will say this, for an indoor stadium, you don't feel like you're indoors.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
That is
pretty remarkable, and to be able to build a stadium like that and still have natural light coming in as much as it does. Pretty cool.
It's the Andrew DePaula revenge game.
Oh. Wow.
If anybody doesn't,
you're quite snappy there, aren't you?
That I was joking. Andrew DePaula is a former long snapper for several years for the Bucks, who's now with the Vikings, and he went to the Pro Bowl last year.
He did,
or was the All Pro? He had a good year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So three. Andrew DePaula is going to long snap his way into revenge victory. No, he was a good dude.
He's a nice guy.
He's been replaced for the last few years by Zach Turner,
mm-hmm.
wow. who's done a good job. You like that?
I did.
You like that? That came.
I don't like Kurt Cousins doing that. That's my biggest fear, with Kurt, is for whatever reason he seems to play well against the Bucks.
Now, the Bucks running game.
Mm-hmm.
That's an area where I really wonder what's going to happen going into this season. I think Dave Canales kind of made it clear that we have not yet used a lot of the stuff we're going to use,
mm-hmm.
you know, because
you're very vanilla. Yeah.
Even when it comes to the running game. It was funny, though, because he described one of our plays. And to backtrack a little bit, I'm getting the impression that while we've been thinking we're switching from a duo team, which duo running is kind of, it's a lot of two linemen double teaming one blocker and that happening in a couple spots, and then you're supposed to be creating a lane for the running back and he's supposed to find it and fly through it.
Yeah.
We thought we were switching from a lot of that to a lot of mid and wide zone, which is a lot more lateral movement with like maybe three of your linemen at once, sometimes pulling from the back, but a lot of lateral movement and then the running back moving laterally and then choosing which finding a seam and cutting up hard, or sometimes cutting back. And then you, the nice thing about that is you start succeeding on that, and it really sets up well for play action bootlegs mm-hmm. back to the other direction. I got the impression more from what he was talking about, Dave Canales, this is on Monday, that we're probably going to have a good mix. So you're still going to see some duo, and you're still going to see some other types of running plays. And he was describing one play where they ran duo, and it was Tristan Wirfs and Matt Filer. Uh-huh. And he's like, they're huge. And, you know, I think I printed it out. Huge. And he's like, there was not any great nuance to this play. They just
made it happen.
Blew up some guys, and there was a hole. And he just, let me read the way he said it. I always talk about our massive left side that we have, where we ran a duo play to Rashad to the left side, and I don't think anyone touched him for about 5 or 6 yards. He gained 9 on the play, and there was no nuance to the play. It was just big men caving this side in. Well, that's easy football. That was a cool thing to see.
Yeah.
So
big men caving it in.
He talked also about the running backs, and he described it a little bit as he thinks Rashad White, he's still finding out what Rashad can do. One of the nice things that people have said about Dave, in addition to his being so upbeat all the time, is that he's not arrogant about what he might not know yet. You know what?
Right.
It's like coaches are saying, it's not just my way or the highway and this is it. He's learning, and he's knowing. Like, he's talked about how, you know, he's adjusting to calling plays and stuff like that. And he said basically that he's still finding out about Rashad White, and he does like how patient he is, how he lets holes develop, blocking schemes develop, but he also is patient in terms of an entire game. So, which bodes well for him getting a bigger role, because the more he's in there,
sure,
the more he just gets rolling. And Dave saw this firsthand when he was on the other sideline when we played Seattle in Germany last year, and that was probably Rashad's best game.
It was. And Dave, I'm sure Dave's, I mean, talk about his first NFL game where he's regular season calling plays. Mm-hmm. I think it would be fun to talk to him after that.
So then he said that he thought we have one. He was talking about how Skip Pete, the running backs coach, who mm-hmm. has
came from
coached
Dallas.
For a long, but most recently from Dallas, he's coached for a long time in the NFL, and he's often had situations where he had kind of a backfield committee. And he said he came just most directly from Dallas, where they kind of had two star caliber backs in Ezekiel Elliott
mm-hmm.
and Tony Pollard.
Right.
He says, we don't really have that situation. We have one guy that I think is a great running back, and then we have other guys that are good.
Right.
And so that's why he thinks the
rest
of the
committee. And he wasn't dissing the running backs.
It's just
superstar. And
So it's not like 1A and 1B. It's 1 and then 2A, 2B, 2C, mm-hmm. kind of like that.
I think Rashad's going to do really, really well. I always liked last year when he did get the ball, how he could see the hole. And he does that little stutter and waits and then goes, which that's
Le'Veon Bell.
Well, exactly. Well, that's a good analogy. Wow.
It's a comparison.
Analogy. Okay. You're on your game today. What are you typing?
My password, because my screen went.
Oh. You have your computer locks up that fast? Jeez. Good. Googly.
Plus,
moogly.
I've messed up my password twice in a row.
Well, that's hard to know. What is it? We'll help you remember. Here to help.
It's too long.
Well, that's on you.
I know. I need a shorter one.
Just so you know.
I know it.
As you're listening to the Salty Dogs, we get to choose our own passwords.
You have to change it every few months, though. I find that irritating.
I'll show you a trick.
All you got to do is go to.
I'll show you a trick.
I know. I know how to do it.
Just it stays the same. It's
okay.
All good.
As for the Minnesota offense, it probably should be pretty good.
I would think it is.
They didn't have a lot of turnover other than letting – well, that's not totally true.
Well, they – now, Cook leaving, that'll be interesting.
They released him. Mm-hmm. They released Adam Thielen, so it was their decisions.
Right.
But otherwise, they still have probably the best receiver right now in football. No offense to Mike Evans, but
no.
Justin Jefferson's probably the top of the
unreal
mountain right now. Jordan Addison could easily be as good as Thielen was last year, because mm-hmm. Thielen didn't have his best season last year. And T.J. Hockenson was great after they got him in a trade. Their offensive line is pretty good. Left tackle Christian Darrisaw had a really nice season. I think their center, Garrett Bradbury, is pretty good. They were kind of middle of the pack in allowing sacks. I do think – did you watch that quarterback thing that – docuseries on.
No, I heard it was really good.
It was entertaining, and one of them they were following was Kirk, and a lot of his story was he got hit a lot. Mm-hmm. So he was dealing with a lot of injuries, and he was getting hit a lot, and I don't know if that means their offensive line was a little shaky last year or not, or, you know, it could just be editing.
Right.
But Kirk Cousins has put up – he keeps putting up good numbers.
Well.
You know? He put up great numbers last year. He's been to three of the last four Pro Bowls, and they got most of the gang together.
Yeah, and they win a lot of games.
And Alexander Mattison is probably not quite as dynamic of a runner as Dalvin Cook, but every time he's gotten a shot, he's done well, mm-hmm. as fantasy football drafters know.
Oh. Good to know.
Yeah, so, I mean, I feel like their offense should be pretty good. I think there's questions about their defense. They've tried to fix some things, and bringing in a new coordinator obviously is a big, big, big change.
Mm-hmm.
But that's going to be sort of like the Bucs quarterback situation. We're going to have to see. They're going to have to prove it.
Yeah, I for whatever reason, Minnesota's managed to maintain a decent club through the last few years. I mean, they've won a lot of games. What their Achilles heel is they just don't do well in the playoffs, which is...
That's a pretty bad Achilles heel to have.
Yeah, yeah, that costs coaches jobs. But how many... So what's their last...
Before last year, their previous two seasons, they were 8-9 and 7-9.
What would before then?
10-6-0 in 2019.
Okay.
They're kind of going up and down.
8-7-1,
13-3, 8-8, 11-5, 7-9.
Right. See, isn't that crazy how you can go from that to jump up to...
This is kind of a weird pattern for them because they've made the playoffs 5 times since 2012, so about every other year, but never 2 years in a row.
Really?
Yeah. They made it in 12, 15, 17, 19, and 22.
Wow.
So that's kind of weird. You don't see that pattern a whole lot. Usually a team can...
Couple years in a row.
Maybe off one and then back. The Bucs got good in 97. They made it in 97. Just missed in 98. They made it in 99, 2000, 2001, 2002.
Right. Wow.
So they seem awfully unpredictable. Of course, that was the first year for Kevin O'Connell as head coach.
Right.
So
that was last year.
Last year.
Yeah.
Maybe they can break that cycle now and just can sort of be continuing on an upward trajectory. I don't think the national media's all that high on them, but considering how we feel
about
how they feel about us, I don't know if we should be putting how much stock we should be putting in that.
Well, I understand you got to write all that stuff. I get all of that, you know, your perspective of the way things are, but I don't know.
Everybody loves the Lions. I think they're the favorite to win that division.
I think that's a great story. That's what everybody loves.
I want them to be good.
Yeah. They've gone along. Talk about fans that have been hanging in there.
Yeah. Phew. I want them to be good.
Except on... October.
When we play them.
Yeah.
When we're in our throwbacks.
15th. Is that what it is? Is it October 15th?
That sounds right. I can look it up.
All right.
I think unless you're like the Vikings and Packers and Bears, I think everybody wants Detroit to be good.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, and I think it is October 15th. That's the throwback game.
Yeah.
The creamsicle game.
How about that?
If I had to predict one way or another, I would think, yes, they are going to do well.
I do.
But I can also see how they could be sort of the disappointing team because everybody's so high on them right now, including the NFL, which put them on opening the kickoff game against the Chiefs.
But
that just shows you how high everybody is on the Lions.
Yeah, that's
it was a surprise. I didn't see that one coming.
That's a tough one. I mean, that's a hard one to start out with.
So their defense last year was bad.
Mm-hmm.
They drafted a middle linebacker,
mm-hmm.
and they brought in some new defensive backs. That could work.
It might.
It might work. But is it hard to predict a world in which their defense isn't that much better?
Well, I will
say... Just because you got a rookie middle linebacker and a couple of new defensive backs?
Right, but I will say this. They believe in their head coach, and that's part of the battle.
He was the head coach for them in...
He's only been there a couple of years, right?
Yeah, okay.
3 years now? This is third year?
I think so, but hold on. So we're talking, of course, about Dan Campbell. Dan Campbell's first year was 2021. They went 3-13-1.
Mm-hmm.
Last year they went 9-8, which involved winning.
At the end of the year, like they seven in a row, something like that, something crazy.
Six to eight of their last 10.
Wow. That's pretty good. That kind of reminds me of the Bucks in 96.
96?
No.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, 96 at the end of the year. Where they
started out 0-5, yeah. Won 6 of their last
yeah.
11.
Yeah, okay.
That's the Tony Dungy year. That's, yes. That's the stick with it, mm-hmm. don't panic, mm-hmm. stay with the plan year.
Uh-huh.
And he was right.
Yeah. So that might be.
Okay, but there's the defense. Are we sure their defense is going to be a lot better? I can see. Jared Goff was a lot better last year.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Probably he's good again. They figured out how to play to his strengths.
Yes, they have.
Probably. But that was his only good year in like the last 3 or 4.
I know.
You know, well, same number of good years that Baker Mayfield has had in
yeah,
in
but
the last
he did go. He
three.
Did. He did get to the. He got to the Super Bowl with.
And, yeah. Yeah. He got to the Super Bowl.
And they wasn't that the low scoring, like 12 to
yeah,
9.
Yeah, because New England knew exactly what to do with, I think it was 9-6.
Yeah, something like that.
He knew
yeah.
exactly what to do with Jared Goff. So then it increasingly got harder for McVay to succeed with Goff, and he knew he needed something else.
And he did.
And he got Stafford. Goff was felt like just a throw-in, kind of evening out the salaries. And yeah. And but he's done he's resurrected his career a bit there. Probably continues to do so.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Jameson Williams, they're the guy, the rookie they drafted in the like 12th overall last year, out for the first, what, 6 games
right.
with a suspension?
Yeah, jeez.
I just think there's holes that
there's
would
holes
be too,
there,
too
but,
hard to exploit. But their offensive line is fantastic.
Going to find out Thursday how it begins.
They're relying on a rookie tight end. And
that game's in Kansas, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay. Yes. No, it's in Missouri.
Well, okay. It's at Arrowhead Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And Travis Kelce may not be playing to the horror
of you.
Of
I know.
Me. Already. I have him on one of my fantasy teams and of fantasy players all over because that guy never gets hurt.
Maybe it's just one of those that because it's the first week they have to report it.
Well, no. He hyperextended his knee in practice.
Yeah, that's not good.
I don't know. I think you can hyperextend your knee and not too severely,
yeah,
and maybe just miss a game
and
or two.
Not too severely, you're hoping.
I'm hoping. Wow. He's listed. Well, like, you shouldn't have to list him. Yeah, I guess he's listed as questionable.
Yeah, well, it's gonna be.
In any case, talking about Detroit and me believing that while I think they're going to be good, and everybody wants them. If you picked a team other than the Bucks and said, who would you like to see do really well this year? Detroit would be up there. Miami. I think Miami's an interesting team. I'd like to see Tua succeed. Mm-hmm. I like their coach. Jacksonville. I'd like to see them succeed and Trevor Lawrence become a star. On the flip side, the question that I asked at the table at lunch today was, if you could pick one team who this season would become a total dumpster fire, who would you prefer that happen to?
I've got two.
Okay. Go ahead.
Dallas.
Always.
And Saints.
Well, we ruled out the Saints right away because that one's too obvious.
Oh, okay.
We always want the Saints to be
okay,
here.
So we had to. So
and we kind of ruled out we decided not to pick within the division.
Now you're giving me rules. That
just
you didn't
no,
give me
nothing
before.
In the division. That still leaves you with 28 teams to
okay.
choose from.
Jets.
That's mine. That's mine.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to be an Aaron Rodgers hater or anything, but it wouldn't be unsatisfying considering his path the last few years for it not to go well for them.
Yeah.
And the Jets are just talking such a big game right now.
Uh-huh.
One of their cornerbacks was just saying today or yesterday that he thinks their defense can be as good as the 85 Bears.
Yeah.
I'm like, pump the brakes a little bit there.
Yeah. You want them to be kept in the dark. I know.
That was a reach.
You actually muted your button.
That was a reach.
Yeah, I that's
some
all,
others
folks.
That came up. Everybody,
who
others? Some
where
people
were the
wanted,
other ones.
Some people wanted San Francisco.
Why?
And I'm like, that's a fun team.
That's a fun team, and they're no.
I didn't agree with
no,
that.
No, I don't
at all.
Agree with that at all. Raiders, maybe.
I threw out the Raiders.
Yeah, okay,
that wouldn't be terrible.
I could see that.
Obviously, if we could pick within our division, we would start with the Saints. The Patriots.
Yeah,
they've.
They haven't done well.
They haven't done great, but they haven't truly bottomed out.
Okay.
But then somebody pointed out, but if they bottom out, maybe they might get to draft Caleb Williams, and then they'll back to being great again. I'm like, oh, that's a good point.
Well, there's that. But
speaking of college quarterbacks, did you see that Colorado game?
I did.
That was nuts.
Yes.
I thought, I didn't know much about the situation, but I kind of just assumed that Deion Sanders' son was the quarterback because he was Deion Sanders' son. He was really good. Yeah. He threw for like 510 yards and like he was dropping dimes.
That whole thing is very impressive that you can go in and bring 85 new players in, but you had a plan, you stuck to it. Totally amazing. Totally amazing. And then everyone was saying the reason why he was bringing his son in was because he was only his son. And
he's got two sons on the team, right?
Yes, and his only success was because they were, you know, at a smaller school, and that's where the success was. That was a fun game to watch.
It was
watch.
A great game to watch, yes. And I was just really impressed. I think his name's Shadur Sanders.
Yeah, you're correct. You're correct.
And then they have that two-way player who played like 127 snaps.
Yeah, yeah. And I saw yesterday, or this today is Tuesday, on Monday, I saw Deion or Coach Prime say that you have to be out of your mind not to let him play both ways. He's the best player on both sides of the ball, which I don't know. I mean,
he was really good. Can you really play 120 snaps a game?
I don't know. He said that he was going to have a hot tub on the plane for the kid flying back. So
he said he didn't want him to practice till Friday.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, he's young. He's got the advantage of youth right now. Not Deion, but the kid.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. Is you know, he's, what, 22 years old?
He was saying that I guess he can be drafted in 2025, mm-hmm. that he could easily be a first-round corner or a first-round receiver.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll see. Of course, coaches talk up their guys.
Well, of course. And, you know, he made a comment about someone not catching a ball, and he said had he caught two balls, the Heisman would have been chilling at his home when he got there. So, but I like Deion Sanders. I just like the way he talks. I just enjoy that.
I like it sometimes. Yeah. Not always. But I think it's going to work there because
– crazy on the amount of – fans that have jumped on it all.
Yeah. So. Well, I think it's going to work because he's getting so much attention, and he gets so much of a platform, and then he talks up his players like crazy, mm-hmm. which is smart. And so guys out there that are trying to decide where to play, I come play for Coach Prime.
Yeah.
He's going to talk about me.
Uh huh.
Hopefully in a good way.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy that they couldn't get anybody to go to their games. They won one game last year. Really got trounced a great deal, and it's a beautiful stadium. It's a beautiful part of the country, though.
I don't think that my team is going to have quite the rebound.
Well, you know who the Buffaloes are going to be playing this weekend.
No, I don't.
Your buddy Matt Rhule in Nebraska.
Go Buffaloes!
Yeah, and he's backpedaling right now, talking because before he was talking about how Deion was just flashy and talk. Oh. And this, now,
is he really?
Yeah.
I don't follow college football.
Now he's talking. Closely enough. Now in his press conference, he goes, there's a reason why everybody had Deion's poster on his wall. You know, he's great. You know, he's
trying to walk it back.
Yeah. Huh? Well, that, and there was another college coach in Colorado that also made a comment that, well, Coach Prime was doing restaurant critiques and things of that nature. You know, selling the program. We're building a great team here, and they lost. So it's funny.
Yeah, they lost to Minnesota, 13-10.
Yeah, it's funny how to watch college ball. I enjoy it because you kind of keep an eye on who's coming out, but I also enjoy it because you just don't know. It's crazy. I mean, You know, the underdogs. I always root for the unranked teams. If you're unranked, I'm all in.
Well, then, hey, jump on the Northwestern bandwagon.
Yeah, you didn't do too well, and I was really rooting for them because you know who they played?
Rutgers.
Yes, and I was rooting very hard for you. Yeah. I almost texted you.
I didn't watch the game.
You didn't?
Nope.
Because
we had the day off, too.
Yeah. You saw the score right away, or you just didn't?
I know they're going to be terrible this year.
Well, they have a lot of problems right now. They have another coach.
And for bad reasons.
Yeah, there's it's disarray, as they say.
It's going to be a while before that program rebounds, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Go back to the dark ages, like when I was in school, and we won 7 games in the 4 seasons I was there.
Yay.
That was fun.
Well, got you.
Tore down the goalposts if we beat, like, Illinois
got
State.
Got you primed when you came to work here with the Bucks for the first 6
That's
seven
true.
Years.
It's so true.
It made you a better writer.
I wasn't a writer for the team back then.
You were a PR guy back then, but I still say, you know, it made me a better broadcaster when you're not covering a team that's winning all the time, because the stories don't fall in your lap when you're struggling. So
it may have been, it may have made you better, but that doesn't mean it was fun.
I didn't know any different. So it was fun.
Yeah, it was fun, I guess.
Yeah. Don't say it wasn't fun.
It was fun.
Yeah.
I mean, working in the NFL is fun.
This is how I look at it. They pay me to watch football. It doesn't get any better than that.
The Salty Dogs.
And we're back here on the Salty Dogs podcast. I'm Scott Smith.
And I am Jeff Ryan.
And this is our favorite part of the podcast, because we have with us a special guest of the week. Yeah. And that is none other than rookie outside linebacker Marquise Watts, one of the breakout stars of training camp. Thanks for your time, Marquise.
Thank you for having me.
One of the biggest stories going in the NFL right now.
We should start by saying congratulations. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure you have a lot of great things ahead of you, but for anybody, making a 53-man NFL roster is an accomplishment. So how'd that feel?
It felt unreal. The first thing that I wanted to do was thank God, because there were so many things and so many trials and tests he put me through to get here. And through his good graces, I was able to pass each one. And through the people that he allowed into my life that I worked with along the way, coaches, families, they all played a significant role. So I can never say I got here myself. So the first thing I want to do is just thank everybody who helped me.
What was the mechanism? Were you sitting at home waiting for a call, or waiting for the phone not to ring?
So, yeah. So how it all works, they don't say anything. So
perfect, right?
So they never called and told you?
No. They told us the day before the game. The vet said, no news is good news.
Okay.
And I was like, oh,
that's
crap.
That's tough, though.
So were you, like, looking at your phone, checking the battery? Do I have enough power? Do I have signal?
So I knew if it was going to happen, it was going to happen. So I just got in a hotel room. I ordered some snacks and a bunch of food off Uber.
I like how you roll.
And but it was a crazy experience, because a lot of the rookies and stuff was on the same hotel floor.
Oh. Okay.
And, you know, those doors, they don't really keep sound out.
Oh, right.
So I'm just in there, you know, I'm eating my food or whatever. And I just hear doors opening and closing all day. Dolly's going down the hallway, bags. And it's an unreal experience, honestly, because you hear about it all the time.
Yeah.
You know, teams do this, teams do that. And it's a totally different experience when you're there in it and your phone can go off. And lo and behold, I got a phone call. And it was a scam from, like, it was a scam. I was so
relieved.
As soon as it... I was like, oh, my God,
no. Here
it is. I answered and said, hello. And it was like, this is Credit Card Solutions. And I was like, man, you got to be kidding.
Spam.
I was slammed my phone. I was like, man.
I am not interested in your product.
Yeah.
I liked what you said a day or so afterwards when we were in the locker room. And you pointed out accurately that you weren't even signed right away after the draft. You came here, and I think you did it with the Jets too, if I'm not mistaken. But you came here for the rookie minicamp on a tryout contract. And for that reason, the way you put it was, I had one shot.
Yeah, I really did. And it wasn't even a shot where I felt like people were, okay, this guy's going to come and make it. I felt like I was completely unknown until I literally showed up. And when I got there, I just did. The guys that I was with in that group, I was like, okay, these are the best of the best. These guys are signed. I just got to do it better than them, or at least do it up to their caliber. And I just did that with every drill. I was just competing. And fortunately, I got the shot.
We learned your name right away, because I don't know. You probably know that last year Shaq Barrett wore 58, and he just switched to 7.
Right.
So I kept seeing 58. I'm like, that doesn't look exactly like Shaq.
And Shaq's body style changed.
Yeah.
So you came from the Charlotte football program. That's only been around for about a decade, right?
Yes, I think they started in 2013.
Yeah.
Yeah. They just had a 10-year.
Spent 5 years there.
Spot 5. Yeah.
Sacker. Oh, in school history?
Yep.
They have had some NFL players, though. Alex Highsmith, right?
Yep.
Larry Ogunjobi.
Larry, yep.
And Nate Davis, I think.
Yes.
So, you know, I've always found it interesting, and it happened here during our time here with the USF when you start a football program in a school that didn't have one. What draws players to go there? What was your draw there?
Man, so my hometown is 45, 50 minutes from Lancaster, South Carolina. Love home. When I was going through the process, there was just I had 11 offers, I think it was.
Oh.
And I was only went on like two or three official visits, but Charlotte felt like home, and it was last minute. Okay. I remember Coach Skolaski. I was about to commit to Wofford.
Oh, I've heard of that.
And the day or two before I actually did it, Coach Skolaski, the special teams coach, walked into our football facility at Lancaster. And my coach called me in, Coach Collins called me in and was like, hey, these guys want to talk to you. I know you're about to commit, but just talk to them. And I went in and sat down, and Coach Lassie kept it real. He sat down and he was like, I know you're about to commit. Is there any chance we can try to change your mind? And I was like, sure. And they brought me an official visit, and I committed that same weekend.
Yeah. Really?
It was amazing. Yeah.
Well, then you just felt right, huh?
Yeah, knew you were supposed to be there.
Yeah.
You know, you talked, when we first started this, you talked about some tests and trials that you've had. Mm-hmm. Can you share with us those trials?
Oh, man. It was many. So immediately right after, you know, school and stuff ended like that, I was entered immediately into life. And I was talking to someone, fell in love with her, and she ended up getting pregnant. So we had already planned on getting – I already planned on getting gas. I don't know about her. But
you were there.
Yeah. And we had a beautiful daughter. Oh. And but before all this, we just had a beautiful daughter 2 months ago. So throughout the process of getting out of school, transferring over into life, there's a big gap in there with no football. And it's – I was – right after school, I had to find a job. I had rent to be due, and school isn't going to pay for it. You're no longer on school. You're not in campus, so you have to figure it out. And just it was a battle. Like, bills were coming so fast. Oh. I didn't have any training, so I had to train by myself. So me and my fiance, she Brazilian. She was better at volleyball at UNC Charlotte. Uh-huh. She holds records too.
Oh, really?
Way more than me. Yeah. She's way better
so
than
she's,
I am.
She's much better athletic.
Yes.
She'll be listed first on the
so
notable
she's trying,
alumni
she's
page.
Trying out right now. Taking the job is what you're telling us.
Way better at volleyball than I am at football.
Wow.
But she was a huge motivation. We went and lift. I still have a video of us going to the gym. It's like 9 o'clock. I got off work. Just try to come home and eat and go lift. And that was my schedule. Mm-hmm. Work in the morning. I was working for a moving company, so that was hard enough. Got home.
That kept you in shape.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man, that's a tough job.
Yeah.
Got home, tried to eat, figure out some stuff, and headed to the gym. Now, my car was breaking down at the time.
Oh, my goodness.
I couldn't afford to fix it. My transmission was going out on the Mitsubishi I had. So I made a video, and I'm stressed out of my mind. Like, I've cried like 4 days out of the week. For like 3 or 4 months. And I kid you not, we're driving there. You can hear my car in the background, like cutting up, and I'm barely making it to the gym. She's in the passenger seat, and I tell her, I'm like, we're going to turn this around. I'm making this video right now because we're going to turn it around. And lo and behold, later on, we end up sitting on the beach, and I made the 90-man roster. And we're here in Tampa, and we're on the beach, and she has my child and everything, and we're just sitting there. I'm happy. Making a video, I said, all right, so next time we make this video, I'm praying that I'm on a 53. So 2 weeks when she moved down here, we're going to make the video again.
Okay.
And we're going to be hopefully established.
On the beach?
On the beach again.
Nice.
So this was like in the spring when your car was breaking down and you made that video.
Yeah.
Wow. And so that's not very long ago. I mean, think about how much your life has changed in what,
literally
5 months?
90 days, yeah.
And even on the 90-man roster, you know, you still don't get – paid until you know you're gonna get bucks, big bucks until September. You're getting game checks, but so those checks were going to bills and going to all the stuff, and we're still like 90-man roster, going to workouts and stuff like that. We're still trying to figure out how we're gonna figure out the bills and stuff like that because the baby was born. We had to pay for medical bills. Because
you didn't have insurance.
Yeah, no, we had insurance. Oh, however,
there's still bills.
Yeah, and me and my fiance were going through this whole citizenship thing where you have to pay an immigration lawyer and stuff. Like, she's from Brazil.
Oh, okay.
Beautiful girl. I love her so much.
Did you see his eyes light up?
So,
what is her name?
Yumi. Yumi Garcia. And so we're going through the citizenship for her.
Okay.
And lawyers. So bills, a daughter, lawyers, just trying to see each other and traveling. It was still a battle.
And, oh, by the way, you have to focus on trying to do football.
Yes. So it was – all of it was in one Ziploc bag, and I had to carry it with me everywhere I went. And I just had to make sure that all those things were compartmentalized. So when I come in here, I just have football. I pull out football, put the Ziploc back in my pocket, and I just work here. When I go back home, then I pull out everything else and I figure out what's going on.
You know, that was a lot of obstacles and all piling up at the same time. For you to continue and you know, be going to this gym in the car that can barely make it, for you to continue to do all this stuff, you must have had an underlying conviction that you were good enough to play in the NFL.
Yes. I just believed that if I didn't stop, I would go somewhere. And it was something I constantly prayed about and just begged God. I was like, please don't let me fail. And not at football, but just at life. I don't want to fail my fiance. I don't want to fail my daughter. I don't want to fail myself. Just don't let me fall short of anything I have the potential of reaching. And I just kept praying and praying. I just worked hard. That's the only thing you control. Just work hard. When you got something to do, just do it. And it's everything I ever did.
We don't got a lot more time.
No, here, but go ahead.
You've made the team. You're one of six at your position, which is deeper than the Bucs usually go at that position. But mm-hmm. there was so much talent there. I don't know if all six are going to be active on game day, but helping a person in that situation become active is obviously making some impact on special teams.
Yep.
And I've heard that Keith Tandy is enamored of your skill set. So do you have some roles in special teams?
Yes. Right now I want to focus on improving my skills on punt. That's somewhere I have the potential of shining. And right now I haven't been shining as great as I could. I wouldn't say I'm uncomfortable, but I'm enthusiastic about the things I could do there.
Cool.
Just real quickly, Jason Light made a comment that you were like Gumby. And I don't know if you know who Gumby is, but Gumby is a clay.
It's a really old cartoon.
Old cartoon that could go really low and do any shape you wanted it to be.
Yeah.
And he said you were like that. So
he's a horse.
Was he a horse?
No, he had a horse.
Oh, he had a horse.
It's this weird-looking green figure. Eddie Murphy, you know, Eddie Murphy is.
Well, it was even before Eddie Murphy.
But he did skits about it on Saturday Night Live, which kind of brought it back around to the public.
But the fact is that I guess you play low.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And can bend.
And can bend.
Yeah. I love it.
And so I guess if you want to say people weren't paying attention to you because of your size, but because of your speed or what it looks like you don't have speed, you make up for it. Is you able to be flexible? Is that accurate in your game?
Yes, that's been something that's allowed me to do certain things that others couldn't, and I was taking advantage of it. I took advantage of it at Charlotte, and I still try to now.
I like it. Well, just be one more. What's your daughter's name?
Cora.
Cora. Okay.
I love Cora so much.
There you go. Cora. Scott is very, very
well because
good
we promised
about time.
Them about
about time. Uh-huh. Me, I wait until I start looking at you, and if you're talking, I keep going. So, but we always follow his lead.
Well,
how's that?
Marquise, hopefully we can get you back on here sometime later in the season and talk a little bit more about football. But I think this was good because we got to hear your story and the fans get to hear your story. And it's really inspirational.
The Salty Dogs.
And we're back here for the final segment on this week's Salty Dog podcast. I said salty dog instead of dogs. Maybe
you
better be worried.
Maybe I'm getting cut.
I'm gonna
go
solo.
Realize it because
I've always wanted to put out a solo album.
I'll let you do this by yourself.
I'm basically Beyonce.
I will set this up.
That's what people
up.
Say about me.
Okay, I'll set this up for you, and you can just go.
What are the names of the other people in Destiny's Child?
You're asking me?
Yeah, that was dumb.
That was dumb. Apparently not very good because you can't remember who they were.
And
I don't even think they exist.
She went solo.
Well, yeah.
But they had a good career or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
I can almost get one of them. Weren't a couple of them sisters?
I have no idea.
Okay. It was Beyonce Knowles, Kelly Rowland, and Michelle Williams.
Okay.
Kelly Rowland that I had on the tip of my tongue, but couldn't quite get. That doesn't sound like they're sisters.
All right.
Okay. Enough about Destiny's Child.
Yeah. Wow. I never saw that one coming.
Well, you know, you didn't expect me to compare myself to Beyonce, probably.
Well, that's very, very true.
All the single ladies. I think that was Destiny's Child. Okay. That always makes me think of the Saturday Night Live skit where Justin Timberlake and a couple other actors are her background dancers.
Oh.
It's very funny. Okay.
All right.
Hey, Scott. This is from Chris from Newport Beach, California, born and raised in Tampa, obviously.
Wow.
Went to Hillsborough High School.
Lucky dog living in Newport Beach. Lucky.
I know where Hillsborough High School is.
I do, too.
Oh, I've never been to Newport Beach.
Very nice.
Hey, Scott and Jeff. I know you guys aren't allowed to gamble or let alone think about it.
You are absolutely
right. We've definitely
got
our message across, haven't we? But I think this is the best way as a Bucks fan to take advantage of all the national analysts in quotes, expert takes in thinking that Tom Brady is gone and Baker Mayfield is in, so therefore the Bucs are tanking for Caleb, which he puts in parentheses, which is laughable.
Right.
There is arbitrage in the public's low expectations of the Bucs. I think by arbitrage, he means like you can utilize that to help yourself if you're betting on sports. You know, bet like overs on the win total.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. I see what you're saying.
Something like that.
Uh-huh.
Thinking they will be terrible versus what I am seeing and hearing from the team and local reporters directly. Uh-huh. The biggest misunderstanding nationally is on Dave Canales and people not piecing together what he did in Seattle with Geno, nor just understanding what a smart and amazing leader he is and how different the Bucs' offense will be with motion and misdirection.
Right, but I think the reason why they say that is because Dave wasn't the OC in Seattle. So I think that's why they're kind of like, yeah, he was there and he helped out, but he wasn't the guy calling the
plays. But that's kind of how it works, right?
Well, like you would think, right?
You take Mike McDaniel off of the 49ers tree,
right,
and hope he can do the same things for another team.
Correct.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
That's why Brandon Staley went from, the 49ers to the Chargers because they loved what the 49ers did on defense and thought he could do the same thing there. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Right.
But Dave was embedded with the team that ran this
for
offense.
For 13 years, yes.
Yeah, but specifically was running this offense that comes down the Shanahan-McVay tree.
Yes.
By way of
I can't think of his
Brandon?
Name.
Yes. No, not Brandon.
No.
Walton? Shane Waldron.
I think you're there.
Via Shane Waldron.
Okay, so
who was the OC?
Yeah,
and he was the quarterback's coach.
I'm sorry, I'm digressing you, but go ahead.
I also believe the defense is going to be special this year, with every level having Pro Bowl talent.
Whoa!
I am hopefully. Well, he's not wrong.
All right,
you got Vita Vea and Shaq up front.
Yep.
You've got Levante, who's criminally only been to one Pro Bowl, but still. And Devin White, they've both been to Pro Bowls, and you've got Antoine Winfield has been to a Pro Bowl in the secondary.
Yeah,
so he's not wrong. Okay, I also think we have two very good starting corners. That's me, not the letter.
No.
So I put my – okay. I also believe the defense – okay, well, blah, blah. I'm hopefully optimistic about the O-line, but I do worry about depth across most of the team if injuries creep up. Well,
that's every day.
It's kind of how it happens. You can see pretty much every year the teams that win the Super Bowl usually are high on the list of least injured teams.
Yeah, stay healthy.
It's like Tom Moore used to say about Peyton Manning, right? And they never had a really great backup for Peyton Manning because he's like, if we lose 12 or –
Effed
anyway.
Yeah.
So I put my money where my fandom is, betting on the Bucs to win the division, Baker to have the most passing TDs within the division,
TDs.
Rashad White to have more than 750 yards rushing this season. That seems kind of a low bar.
Yeah, it's a low one. I'd say that's low.
And heavy bets on the opening game. Whoa, on the opening game is the Vikings. I assume he's getting a spread, right? Bets,
but considering I believe the Bucks are 6.5
6.5
underdogs.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, considering Minnesota's most of their games ended
by
3-point margins last year.
See, you would be good at that.
Betting?
Yeah.
I one of the reasons why I've never done it and gotten into it is because I don't think I would be good.
Yeah.
I'm not willing to put in the time it takes to race.
Yeah. And you work too hard for your money just to.
Well, I mean, if that would turn my money into more money, I'd be in favor of that.
If you didn't work for the NFL.
If I didn't work for the NFL.
Okay.
If this works out like I hope it does, I can finally tell my wife there is value in me watching every single press conference and video that drops on Buccaneers.com, let alone the games each Sunday.
And don't forget listening to the Salty Dogs.
That's pretty great, isn't it?
That's very great.
He really did put his money where his mouth is.
I like it.
Okay, of these bets, Bucks to win the division, which do you really like here? Bucks to win the division, Baker to have the most passing TDs within the division. Rashad White to have more than 750 seems like the easiest one.
Mm-hmm.
Or the Bucks beating the spread against the Vikings. I kind of like that one because he could win the bet even if
you lost
the game.
Yeah. Yeah. Right now, well, depends on when he decides to do it, where the line is. Now, the line's going to move.
He's already done it, I guess.
Okay, he already did?
Well, he said he put his money where his mouth is, placing bets.
Okay, so he's 6.5, which is basically a touchdown. So yeah, he gets 7. The score right now is 7-0 Bucks.
Go Bucks.
Yeah.
Okay, he also says, and this is cool, P.S. Scott, I am a GT Georgia Tech alum, so shout out to your son.
Oh.
Isn't that cool?
That's very cool.
and was also a SAB, Student Advisory Board. Remember that?
Yeah.
Alum during the 2001 and 2002 season, crossover from Dungy to Gruden. So, yeah, that's cool. We used to have a thing called Student Advisory Board, which was a bunch of high school students.
Sure, they'd come in, yeah.
What did they do? I don't remember what
I think they it was just kind of like...
they got involved in activities.
Yeah, stuff, right? A lot of community service stuff. Yeah. Kevin Brown used to run that.
I remember Kevin. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty cool. And, yeah, go Jackets.
So I wonder what he does for a living.
Well, maybe he'll write in and tell us that next time.
Yeah.
Georgia Tech, though.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I watched their game, too.
That was so frustrating. As fun as that Colorado game was to watch, somebody told me that one of my friends texted me and was like, man, Georgia Tech's killing it. Because apparently they scored 28 points in the second quarter.
They did.
So I'm like, okay, I'll watch that. I flip over to it as halftime. Every single thing that happened from then on was terrible for Georgia Tech. They didn't score another point. No, they couldn't do anything. They couldn't stop anything. It was just like, what happened? I didn't get to see any of the scores.
You turned it on.
It was unreal. It was so frustrating. And then they got down, but they were only down by two, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And they were driving and had gotten all the way down to like the 12-yard line. Even if they don't get it in, they can kick a go-ahead field goal. And the dude gets sacked and fumbles. And then they run for a like 80-yard touchdown on the next play.
That's why I love college football. You just don't know what's going
to
happen.
Well, you don't love it when the bad thing happens to the team.
Well, I understand. But that's why it's just, you know, you just don't. I mean, it's like they score 28 points in the second quarter. You figure any team scoring 28 points in the second quarter, I think you're going to win that game.
They'll probably continue to score some points, right?
You know, even if they only score seven more in each. But, yes, that's college football. You just don't know. All right. What's our other question?
Okay.
That was very good, Chris. Thank you.
And go Jackets. All right. This is from Stefan Bornhoft.
Okay. Oh, Germany?
Yes. From Berlin.
Okay.
Stefan. It probably is. I think he's told us how to pronounce all this before, but I don't remember. Stefan Bornhoft.
SB.
Ahoy, Salty Dogs. I am excited. And then we get bullet points. A. New season means new episodes of my favorite podcast.
Oh, that's very nice.
Thank you. Finally listening to Scott and Jeff again with a smiley face emoji.
Okay. I like
B, a still talented team with lots of new guys.
I think we've talked about this.
13 rookies. Only the Rams have more this year, right? I spent about 5 minutes trying to look up if the Rams were one and we were two, and then it was like, this is going to take too long. So I can tell you the Rams have 15 compared to our 13.
15?
Yeah, but you know why? Every single one of their specialists is a rookie.
Oh, okay.
They have a new long snapper who's an undrafted free agent. They drafted a punter in the 7th round, and they drafted don't even have a kicker listed here. But they've got 3 rookies listed on their special teams depth chart, so that kind of pushes them from about a dozen to about 15.
All right. Wow, that's still amazing.
And see,
isn't that crazy? 2 Super Bowl teams.
Well, both teams are paying the bills is what it is.
But you know what? I'd do that again.
Oh, I'm sure the Rams are
line
totally
it
pleased.
Up. Yeah. It's hard to come by.
And then
C.
An opportunity to prove the naysayers of the national media wrong.
Wow. Another,
this one with a winky face emoji. Okay.
I'm not so far off base. People feeling the same thing. I like it.
2 questions. What would be a successful 2023 season for you?
I win the division.
Yeah, that would definitely be a successful.
Yeah.
I would go even lower and say be in the running for the playoffs down the stretch. If the Bucks are competing for a playoff spot
in December, okay.
I think that's a success because, as we've mentioned a few times now, most media expect us to be more in the running for one of the first draft picks than another playoff spot.
Mm-hmm.
So if this team is in the running for a playoff spot, unless it's just like everybody in the division is 6-9, even then though, I mean, if you're playing meaningful games.
Yeah.
So those are our answers for that. And then his second question is Todd Bowles really sitting on a hot seat? And he mentions an article, links to an article from the Pewter Report here. I didn't read it.
No.
He says, I wouldn't find that a bit. I would find that a bit unfair because last year he couldn't make decisions that a head coach can normally make, such as putting together his coaching staff.
I think head coaches nowadays are always on the hot seat, no matter what, because I don't want to say patience level, but you don't have that 3-4 years. Let's see how you're going to do. If you start looking around the league, how fast head coaches change. But
well, I would think it would be more than a bit unfair, as Stefan says, for a coach coming off a division winning season to be on the hot seat. He's been the head coach for 1 year and we won the division.
Yeah, but no one's giving it credit because it was such a poor division, everybody says.
Yeah, but still, right. The banner's hanging.
Well,
hung a banner. it just,
I totally agree.
Two seasons, you know, I don't know. I don't like this kind of discussion anyway, talking about your coaches and hot seats and so on. But no, I think that is, if somebody were to say that about him right now, I would think that'd be more than a bit unfair.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you. Good question. That becomes opinion, not concrete. That's just opinion.
Okay. This is from Philip Schwadron. Phil Schwadron.
Okay.
Bucks fan since 1979 from Woodland Hills, California.
We get a lot of Cali people. I like it.
We've had discourse with Phil before.
Okay.
Hey, S-Dogs. Great to have you guys back for another season. We sure are getting a lot of compliments. I think people heard us joking about that, and now they're actually doing it.
Well, that's nice.
Good way to get your question read is to...
Sure, yeah. Suck up to them first, and then jab them in at the very end.
On the eve of the first regular season game, I'm full of optimism for this year. A lot of things have to go right, of course, but I see no reason why we won't compete for the division title again. So there's a lot of people on the same page.
Yeah, okay.
This is a good question.
Well, you know, this is the Salty Dogs about the Buccaneers. So you're trying to look for the games haven't even started yet. So you're looking for a glimmer of hope, you know.
I think there's a lot of glimmers.
Okay.
We're glimmering.
We're glimmering.
We've got glitter on us. We're covered in glitter.
The future's so bright, I need sunglasses. Go ahead. What do you got?
This is a good question. I like this one. My question is, what is your favorite opening game of a season? Now, he's going to go ahead and share. He's going to go ahead and give us the answers here. I have a few. The 1997 win against Steve Young and the 49ers. The Fitzmagic Saints game of 2018. Cadillac Williams' debut in 2005. And the 2003 dismantling of the Eagles in the new Lincoln Field.
Well, I don't have to answer.
Hey, question answer.
Done.
Asked an answer.
As you were going through, I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to jump to this one. Okay, I'm going to jump to that one.
He just named them all. Huh?
Yeah, good. Very good. Yeah. I think the opening game against the Dallas Cowboys was pretty good.
2 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was an exciting game.
That was an exciting game.
Not the one last year.
No.
That game wasn't as exciting. The one here in Tampa.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
because it kicked off the, you know,
he did really a good job of probably picking the best ones.
Yeah,
I did.
Excellent.
I think
you got another?
Well, I love of those, I think the 97 game probably stands out to me because that's really, I know the turnaround started in 96, mm-hmm. but 97 was starting out 5-0, back to the playoffs, and it started the whole rise towards the Super Bowl.
And you saw the defense come to life that game.
And the 49ers were this juggernaut of a franchise. Mm-hmm. Buccaneers were 6-10 the year before, and the defense goes crazy. Warren Sapp, this isn't great, but we know it turned out okay. But Warren Sapp injured both Jerry Rice on an end around and Steve Young on a sack. Steve Young, I believe, came back in the game. Jerry Rice may have missed the rest of that season.
Right there. That's when you knew what the defense could be.
And this wasn't a case of, oh, well, we just didn't realize that San Francisco wasn't very good because San Francisco lost that game but still finished 13-3 and made it to the NFC Championship game.
Wow.
So they were not bad. No. They were good.
Yeah.
So that was an exciting game, and it started off that 5-game winning streak and really the whole turnaround. And after the fifth win, we were on the cover of Sports Illustrated, which used to matter. And I would add in there, just for personal reasons, the 92 season, just because it was my first season, and we beat Arizona.
That was your opening?
They were called Phoenix back then. Yeah. My very first game was a home game. Again, I'm saying my first game like I played in it. But the first game that I was here for That one I would add to my list, but I wouldn't expect most fans to
remember it.
Care about that one very much.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the 05 one with Kalik, that was in Minnesota.
Oh, yeah.
You remember he sealed the game with like a 70-something yard touchdown run?
Yep. Left his shoe, ran out of his shoe.
Yeah. Good memory on that one.
And his shoes are now in the Hall of Fame.
Not for that reason.
No, not because he left it there.
Because he had more rushing yards.
They found it. What do you do with the shoe? Take it to the Hall of Fame.
Take it to the Hall. He had more rushing yards in his first three games than any other player had or yet has had, I think, in NFL history.
That was pretty exciting.
The game, was it 2016 or 17 where we beat? Yeah, it was 16 in Atlanta. Dirk Koetter, I think it was Dirk Koetter's first game as a head coach. And we beat them 31-24. Mm-hmm. Was that I think that was the Quan Alexander game where?
Oh, where Quan's brother was killed.
Passed away, but he passed away. He had an amazing game.
Yeah, he came back. Didn't practice all week, but came back for the game.
And then had an amazing game.
Yep.
But I got to go with 97 there.
Okay. Fair enough.
The Fitzmagic one was the 48-40 shootout.
Yeah, that was just funny.
Good question, Phil.
Excellent. And great answer.
And actually, the 03 game is noteworthy. Bucks won the Super Bowl and got to the Super Bowl because they shut down the Vet.
Yep.
Beat the Eagles in Philadelphia in the last game ever in Veterans Stadium.
Yes.
And then won the Super Bowl. And then, irritatingly, John Gruden in particular was irritated, we get the Week 1 Monday night game because that's how they used to do it.
Yeah.
But we don't get to be at home because they want the Eagles-Bucks matchup and they want to highlight the first regular season game in Lincoln Financial Field.
Correct.
So you have to go play at the link instead of having a home game.
So no matter whatever happens, we'll always have, we shut down the Vet and we give you your first loss at Lincoln Financial.
And it was 17-0. And Joe Vish
is that boop-boop play in the end zone.
So
still
great.
See it.
Still
it
one
great.
Of the best catches I've ever seen.
Yep.
So that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And I remember Rondé telling me.
I think Rocky was there for the beginning of pregame.
Yeah, up on the board.
Up on the board, yeah.
Yeah.
Sylvester Stallone. I'm calling him Rocky.
And after that game, Rondé told me that he thought we were better than the Super Bowl
team.
He
told me that, too, and I got all excited.
Well, and he might have been right at that moment.
Well, injuries happen.
Yep.
Okay.
And some bad luck finishes. Yeah, okay. Yeah. One more from Mark Rice from Mesa, Arizona.
Okay. Boy, we're kind of a West Coast. East Germany, so I guess. Yeah. All right. Go ahead.
I can't remember if I've asked him before, but next time you write in, Mark, let me know if Guaidos is still open. It's this really awesome little Mexican restaurant in Mesa.
Guaidos?
Guedos. Hmm. For all I know, they're closed. This is like 20 years ago or more.
Uh-huh. Or they're still there because they were so good.
It was my favorite place there.
Really?
Yeah. They have a lot of great Mexican food in the Valley.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Gentlemen, happy kickoff week. Yep. I've been following the class action lawsuit between NFL teams. I'm going to lean on you because I'm not going to know anything about the answer to this one, Jeff.
Well, I hope I know.
I've been following the class action lawsuit between NFL teams and the league regarding broadcast rights / Sunday ticket, and would be interesting to hear your thoughts if comfortable doing so. Depending on how this shakes out, I could see teams establishing their own streaming services, which would be a welcome change to this out-of-market fan. As much as I would love to watch the Bucks games live each week, the current prices of Sunday ticket are just a bit steep for me. Hopefully the hypothetical Buccaneers Plus will be offered at a much appealing price point. Winky emoji. Yeah. I think the repercussions of this case could be significant, and we'll be watching it closely. In the meanwhile, I'll continue to listen along to Gene and Dave via SiriusXM, which is a pretty good consolation prize.
Nice.
Have a great trip to Minnesota and go Bucks. So, do you know anything about this?
Well, first of all, thanks for listening to the radio. We appreciate that. And, Sirius Satellite Radio is great out of market. If you want to partake.
And pretty affordable, I think.
It's very affordable, yeah. It's a good setup. I think the problem which you have is that individual clubs probably aren't going to get into that because as a collective bargaining, you know, when you have the NFL ticket, all of that, that is huge. That is huge revenue stream for the NFL. And there's nothing that's being done other than we're allowing you to broadcast these games.
Is there any possibility, though, that what he's saying here is that this lawsuit could lead to a landscape where you don't have that collective bargaining anymore and teams have to do it?
It's hard to see that world. Yeah, right now it's hard to see that world.
But then again, could you have predicted 10 years ago that the NCAA conferences would do what they've done now?
Well, that's just it, too. I think eventually everything's going to be streamed, and it may eventually become a pay thing all the time. But that's, you know, the NFL became big because of over-the-air TV. Yeah. And it was, now, you know, a lot of people forget. I don't know who I was talking to yesterday. We were talking about home games, and I said, oh, yeah, you know, when they used to black them out. And they were like, what do you mean they blacked them out? I said, well, if you didn't sell out within 72 hours of the kick, the game would be blackout at home. And they could not fathom that.
Really?
They were like,
that speaks to my point of how things change.
Change, right. Well, because the NFL figured out that by not showing a game didn't make people not want to see the game or want to come to the game.
Didn't make them want to come to the game.
Yeah.
You didn't buy tickets because you couldn't get it.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Which is
that was common sense. Well, that was
they made a common sense decision.
Yeah.
But it was that way for a very long time.
Well, I want to say it's only been like, what, maybe 7 years, if that?
And before that, it was pretty much decades, right?
Right.
As long as I've known the NFL.
Oh, yeah. It's notorious for that.
It hasn't MLB gone in the other direction, though, with a lot of teams did have their own broadcast, but
don't anymore. But that's the that's the difference between football and baseball. Because there are so many games, there are so many regional broadcasts.
That's what I was trying to, regional broadcast.
Yes. Now, during the preseason, we have a regional broadcast, which is Chris Myers and Rondi Barber doing that on our partner WFLA. Unless you have DirecTV, then you don't get Channel 8, but that's a whole other story. So baseball, everybody, it's not just the national game. You know, the national game is Fox and ESPN. They do a national game each week. But for 162 games, the home club is doing their broadcast. So it enables them to go ahead. And they don't also MLB does not have collective where they share revenue. Every team's on its own. Now, unless the NFL got away from shared revenue, I think that would be different. But MLB is whatever you can get for your broadcast fee, that's what you get, regardless of what market you're in.
I know you know all that much better than I do, but what I was asking was, hasn't there been a decrease in the number of teams that have regional broadcasts?
No.
Like, I thought that had gone... Like a bunch of them had stopped doing that.
Mm. No. Who would stop? Who would stop doing a regional broadcast
if it wasn't cost effective? If they weren't getting,
I have not heard that. I'm going to look into that because I would think that would be kind of crazy that you wouldn't do your own broadcast. Now on MLB Network, you get the home broadcast. Or you can get the visitors broadcast. MLB Network does not produce the game. They just take the feed. Are you seeing something? Are you looking? You're studying it very hard.
Like, for instance, Texas Rangers terminating television rights deal.
If
Bally Sports goes bankrupt. Some of these things are going bankrupt.
Well, Bally Sports is going bankrupt. They were the ones that bought the rights fee. Yes. So the team's going to – Bally is in bankruptcy.
A regional sports network bankruptcy means some baseball fans may not see games on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not Bally. It's Diamond Sports Group.
Correct. That's
okay, I've already found two.
Okay. But what will happen is probably what teams will end up doing is creating their own broadcast, creating their own revenue stream, and all you need is a station to put it on.
MLB may have to take over local TV broadcasts. Gosh darn it.
Yeah.
Of 14 teams and take a $1 billion hit in the process. About $1 billion of Major League Baseball's revenue is at risk if a cable television company fails to make payments for local broadcasting rights to 14 teams.
Right.
And the sport is stuck. So I was right.
Yeah. But what happened there? Okay. With Bally, though.
This is Sinclair. Sinclair Broadcast Group. So that's three.
Sinclair
acquired 21 regional sports networks in 2019 from the Walt Disney Company.
Right. So again, it's a huge network of.
But they're cutting. People are cutting cords. They fear in a cord cutting In an era of cord cutting, they may not get payments from the Diamond Sports Group, the Sinclair Broadcast Group subsidiary, operating the networks under the name. Okay. Yeah. It may be these are all the same thing.
Yeah, they are.
But nevertheless, we're talking about 14 teams that could lose their regional broadcasts.
Well, it also is what, without getting into a lot of it, but what happens is you, maybe Sinclair, Bally, and them overestimated what they're paying for the rights.
Right.
They overestimated what the revenue stream could be.
Right. And so now they don't want to be in that business anymore.
Right.
Jeff.
Right. But someone will be in the business because they're not going to pay as much money to the club.
Or the league will take it over.
I think the league takes it over because they want to keep it going. But if the league took it over, then again, you have a network. You have MLB Network, and then you would have...
I know, but I'm saying this is going in the opposite direction of what the questioner was talking about, going from packages, NFL packages, to teams having team-specific streams.
But then you would...
MLB is going in the opposite direction.
If MLB takes it over, then they give you a total package.
And you have to pay for all of it. That's what this guy is saying. He doesn't want to pay for to see all the teams. He wants to pay to see the Bucks.
For individual. I don't.
Could we ever see that happening? I'm suggesting that what's happening in baseball makes it less likely because that model has not been working.
Well, no. It's kind of like when you, no matter what, whether it's a cable company or you stream, whatever, you don't get to just pick your one little thing. It's always a package. You see what I'm saying? They give you channels that you don't want. And I'm a big believer in it. If it was up to me and I got to pick channels, I might only have 10 channels that I'd ever watch, even though I have 175. So could it happen?
Okay. I'm just saying his hypothetical is that every team had their own and you could choose which ones you wanted. And I don't think it feels like it's going in that direction.
I don't think it is either.
Particularly with the NFL, because... if that were to happen, then you would have a disparity between teams of how much revenue they were getting from broadcasts as compared to now when every team gets the same amount, which plays into the salary cap.
But see, baseball doesn't have that. That's what I was trying. Maybe I didn't explain it correctly enough. Go ahead.
Well, the NFL likes having a salary cap and a salary floor because it likes parity. And it has parity in that teams can get better quickly and do every year. A number of teams go from not making the playoffs to making the playoffs or worst to first, much more so than in baseball. When Kansas City Royals have a good season out of the blue, it's like, oh, it's wonderful. It's great. And then they suck again for 10 years.
Yeah. Like this year.
Yeah. And if the,
and
if
it's
the
a
NFL
lot
did
of
that,
games too. That's the other side.
The Giants, for instance, would probably get a lot more revenue from their broadcast than the Bucks or the Jaguars or I don't know.
Well, because of your market size. Yes. Yeah. Because of your market size.
Right. And built in size of the fan base.
You know, now the Yankees have their own network. It's called the Yes Network.
I know.
But they're the New York Yankees. And, you know, there's.
I just think it would throw out of whack the whole system with the salary cap.
Yes.
And all that, with the revenue sharing and the salary.
As long as you're sharing, as long as everybody's getting the same piece of pie, yes.
But my question, because I don't know much about this lawsuit, is that is the possible outcome of something like this that the Bucks would, I mean, that the NFL would not be able to collectively bargain their team's rights anymore?
Because of the antitrust?
Yeah, and I know that the NFL's been able to keep its antitrust exemption for all these years.
Well, all bets are off if you get through the antitrust. So who knows how it will go, but I don't think it's a feasible model.
Yeah, we'll see.
So
we probably won't see.
Well, I don't. I hope.
I wish that Mark could have access to watching the Bucks game.
Listen, I'm the same way. You know, now, at one time, the NFL ticket was like $10 a week.
Really?
That's in the very beginning. This is like late 90s.
And, I would pay that even though I only watch one.
I did. Well, that's even though I traveled for games and did games, I would get home and I would watch the West Coast games or the late games, all the late games, which was fun. You know, it was like, oh, this is good. But now it is pricey. And it got even pricier now that it left DirecTV and it's now, I think it's on YouTube now. the NFL ticket. I think it's like $450.
I never pay much attention to any of that because I don't have to. Yeah. I know I don't need Sunday ticket. I don't need access to all the games because I'm working.
But I totally get where he's coming from, because the frustration is with technology and the way things are, you would think that it would be really simple to pick and choose what you want. But the problem is, how many people are going to pick this team and how, just what you were saying. So that's why you kind of have to ban it together.
All right. That's the last question, but I just noticed this piece of paper was something I was going to ask you.
Oh, what?
So this is basically a...
you have all these papers.
A remnant. It's basically a remnant from the first segment, which I meant to get in there. But so Baker Mayfield will start on Sunday.
Uh-huh.
How many different week one opening day starting quarterbacks have we had in our history?
Wow. I'm 37.
Oh, you went way too high.
Really?
So it's 40, let's see, 76 to 2003. This is our 48th season?
Yeah.
Because that
was...
you got to remember, Dilfer had a good 6 years. Doug Williams had about 5 years.
Was it Doug that long?
Jameis had five, although he didn't make every opening day start because that one time he was suspended. Brad Johnson had, four?
Okay, that's fair.
The answer is 20. 20, and Baker will be 21.
Wow.
Baker will be 21.
That's a lot lower than I thought.
Steve Spurrier, Randy Hedberg, Doug Williams, Jerry Goldstein, Jack Thompson, Steve DeBerg.
Throwing Samoan.
Steve DeBerg, Vinny Testaverde, Craig Erickson, Trent Dilfer, Sean King, Brad Johnson, Brian Greasy, Chris Sims, Jeff Garcia, Byron Leftwich, Josh Freeman, Josh McCown, Jameis Winston,
Tom Brady.
No, Fitzpatrick.
Oh, Fitzpatrick. Oh, correct. And then Tom Brady.
I just forgot his first name.
Magic Man. long beard.
I just saw a pretty funny commercial.
How soon we forget. I don't want to say Mike. It's not. It's
Ryan.
Ryan Fitzpatrick.
I don't know. That's getting old right there. Just suddenly blinking on a name you know very well.
Well, because it goes out of nowhere. It came out
of nowhere. I just saw him in a commercial yesterday.
Do you
funny.
Remember the commercial?
Yeah. They played on the whole Fitzmagic thing, and they had him in an outfit like the one he wore after the DeSean Jackson game. Okay. All right.
Wow. We went a long, long time.
Yep.
Okay.
That's good content.
All right. Very good. Let's do it again next Tuesday, huh?
Sure. We'll try.
Let's see if we're 1-0. Or is it 1-0?
I usually say 1-0, but whatever.
Okay. Since you did, thanks for listening.